so far. Eager for action, hot for the game. The calling attraction, the drop of a name. They knew all the right people, they took all the right pills. They threw outrageous parties, they paid heavily bills.
Howdy everybody, Cable Smith welcoming each and every one of you into episode 169 of Justified Pursuit. You're not riding shotgun today because we're actually sitting in the same room. Chisholm Cook, how are you? The good if this, counselor.
If this was a truck, I would be on the shotgun side, but yeah. doing better than you are.
Why is that?
Because you're grumpy.
I'm annoyed because we're at turkey camp and no turkeys are dying.
Yeah, but you were grumpy when we got here.
Well, I feel fine. Okay, minus good. The whole, you know, my intestines trying to poke out of my abdomen thing.
Right. Yeah. Cable's due for some hernia surgery.
Which he punched me in my hernia earlier today because it was like 6 a.m. and we're getting ready to go turkey hunting, and he didn't have a hat on. And I was like, what happened to all your hair, bro?
Ha, ha, ha. He's very excited that my male pattern baldness is about where his was 15 years ago.
Yeah, you're catching up slowly but surely. We're all going to end up in the same place.
True. It's true.
Yeah. Did you guys have a good Easter?
We had a great Easter.
Good.
We sure did. Went to a Good Friday service Friday night. Not a lot of Saturday. Took care of the yard and whatnot. And awesome 10 a.m. service on Sunday. Our little church in the Hill Country that normally has about 350 people show up on a Sunday. We combine our two services to one for Easter, and we had over 900 show up.
Nice.
15 plus people baptized. It's cool.
Excellent.
It's good. What about you?
We showed up to church 15 minutes earlier than normal. So usually we show up 5 minutes before it starts. Don't have a problem getting a seat. And then we also go to the 10 o'clock service. But 15 minutes early was like 30 minutes late on Easter. So
yeah,
they were like, we were like walking in. We'd been waiting in this line to get in. The 9 o'clock service had let out, and they're like, "Oh, standing room only, or you can go up to the parlor, see what you see up there." I don't know. So we went to the contemporary service, which we like the pastor okay, but I don't really like the music. Like, you don't know. I didn't know any of the words to any of the songs. Like, maybe it's like, you know, "Get Off My Lawn" guy, but I want to hear the songs that I sang at youth camp if we're gonna sing contemporary songs.
So I've been there.
All those are like 30 years old now, so.
Right. When we really started going to church, what would it have been? 12 years ago, probably, when we lived in the Woodlands. Hmm. Ashley wanted to go. We were also going to a Methodist church at the time, and Ashley wanted to go to the contemporary service because she liked the music and the less rigid form of the Methodist liturgy, I guess. But that's what I grew up in, and it felt weird to me. But man, now that's, if I'm listening to music, I'm listening to modern worship music. That's all I listen to. Hmm. Some of those songs are pretty awesome.
So then why do you complain when I play like real legit modern day country music coming in and out of the commercial breaks if you don't even, you have no skin in the game?
Because about half of what you like just sounds terrible. It's just not
so
good.
I'm the opposite end of the spectrum. Like I enjoyed the contemporary music for a long time, and then once we went back to the traditional service, like I'm back on, and so is Aaron. She's like, after that service, she was like, I didn't enjoy one of those songs. Give me the hymnal, please.
Yeah.
So it's weird because I always growing up Southern Baptist, I mean, it was always the hymnal, and I kind of got tired of it, you know, as a younger man, and then now I'm kind of like, maybe I am my parents.
I still like traditional Christian music too.
Love you, Mom and Dad.
You know, I would probably dig a service where we dove into the old hymns.
How great thou art.
There's been a few things.
Some bangers.
I don't know if I'd call them bangers, but
as far as hymns go,
they're definitely. I mean, there's nostalgic comes to mind, but that's not really the word I'm looking for. They're definitely that, but
Traditional?
Yeah, tradition. Yeah, I guess that's the traditional, traditional
service with the traditional
conservative
music. Yeah.
I would say reverent. I think that's probably what I was getting at. But
that's a good one.
I mean, some of the new worship music is. I mean, you're definitely worshiping when you sing it. Full of, like, they're usually there's almost always scripture in them, and if it's not specifically scripture, it's clearly pulling the message of scripture into the song. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a little bit of a reverence for a little more reverence in the older stuff, I feel like. Maybe that is because of nostalgia. Something else I've been kind of made aware of, I guess, in the last year or so is, have you ever listened to any, like, what are those old Catholic chant stuff? What's it called?
Hmm.
Maybe I can look it up. You know, but like the big, deep, bassy, like, oh, that would like fill a cathedral, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah,
I'm like, far from any sort of expert on music in general.
Right. But, so that's why I pick the intro and outro music.
Right. That plus you do all the post. But there's a lot of science about like frequencies. Helping to like elevate consciousness and stuff like that. And those tones from that music, let me see if I can find it. Gregorian chanting.
Hmm.
Gregorian chanting. That's what I was trying to think of. There's something about how it like actually affects your consciousness, especially in a cathedral setting with it like reverberating
mm-hmm.
off the walls.
I get that.
There's some science behind that.
Do I? When I hear the sound that you're talking about, I like it. I enjoy it.
Yeah. That. Yeah, it like resonates into your soul. Right. Yeah.
I like it.
So a buddy of mine sent me like a YouTube, you know, page that just plays Gregorian chant all the time, and I've been wanting to check it out, especially if I'm trying to like clear my mind and pray.
Yeah.
But I haven't yet. But yeah, there's something, I don't know, dude, like it definitely just like you feel that music.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? In a spiritual way, I guess.
My wife's parents met us in church. They don't come very often. And then we went to my sister-in-law's for lunch, and then we went to my parents' for dinner. And we were talking about when we were just turkey hunting, like kind of the difference in at my family gathering, like prayer was a big part of that before we ate, you know? Some places it's not like that. Even some Christian households, it's not, you know, maybe they don't pray before they eat. I don't know.
Yep.
My dad always does it, though. Always. Right. Sometimes Jansen or I, one of my brothers, will step up and do it. But it's his house. It's his place.
Sure.
If we do it at my house, I generally do it. That's kind of the rule.
Yeah, I think that's sort of like the unspoken rule just in general.
Yeah.
Unless you're at a house where nobody feels comfortable doing it and you got to step in and do it. When we're at mom and dad's, you know, ranch all together, I lead the prayers nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's an important thing to do. But it's also very important to do it, not just when you're praying or putting the kids to bed.
Yeah.
That's something I've been really working on, trying to pray randomly, I guess.
That I do, but the thing that we talked about also, because we're really sharing a lot of our personal lives, but we do that from time to time on here, is praying with your wife, just the two of you.
Yep.
And Aaron and I don't do that routinely, but I don't see how that could not have anything other than a positive impact on your marriage.
Definitely.
Yeah.
My parents
have always done that, and they still do it.
Yeah.
It's like they taught me to do that, and I haven't been, so I need to.
I was listening to Michael Knowles from the Daily Wire the other day. He had some debate with some lady who's, you know, thrown herself into, you know, this new age red pilled movement that's going on where it's like they're like conservative, but not in traditional conservative ways. And her whole
kind of like the Daily Wire, who just got rid of Candace Owens.
Yeah, that's a whole conversation we could have. But her like her
she was telling a little too much of the truth there.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely was not welcome to be questioning the Israeli cause at the Daily Wire. Although I was listening to Ben Shapiro pointing out Matt Walsh does it. He's not been fired or whatever the terms of their separation was, but you got me off track. What was I going to say? Praying with your wife.
This lady's in this red pill.
Right. Her like main thesis from what I understand is the cost benefit of analysis for men to get married doesn't work out anymore, and so they just shouldn't.
Huh.
And her take is men don't want to be tied down to one woman anyway. Good men do.
Right.
And women are just going to divorce you and take all your money. So why do it?
Well, so that's why you don't marry that woman.
Bingo. Exactly. But then she'll, I think she also kind of gets into that, like options on both sides are dwindling, and it sounds more like she's somewhat accurately assessing the state of, you know, male female relationships in 2024. But her solution is just like, well, just lean into it. It's like, how about no? Like, how about we get back to...
So that will help with... But that's the other side of the fence's goal is to depopulate the earth. But we'll help with that.
Yeah, she seems to be playing that game. Hmm.
Yeah, I saw this video the other day, and it was of... You know when you go to... You're from the coast. Little sand crabs that are all over the Texas coast.
Sure.
Up and down every mile of it. I saw this video of this crab, and these people are sitting around a campfire on the beach, and the crab just... Casually just walks right into the fire.
Dang.
I was like, that is what society in 2024 looks like right there.
Wow. Was that what the post was about?
Yeah.
Just well, making that point?
No, the I just took the video and I posted it on our Justified Pursuit. Oh. I said society in 2024. Their original
so
post
you made
had
the connection. That's
nothing
not,
to
right,
do with society.
Right, right,
it was like, ooh, look at the poor little crab just ran into the fire and died.
That's a pretty astute observation that you were able to make on that.
He goes, dude, you know, he kind of zigzags his way there. He doesn't just take a straight line. I think we're more on like the straight line, but he eventually got into the fire on his own accord and died. Yeah.
Well, so just real quick. So the Knowles thing, he was citing the statistics about divorce rates and how, you know, you're like four or five times less likely to end up divorced if your family goes to church. But it specifically, he claims, according to some study, that if you pray with your wife, like we're talking about, then you're like 10 times more likely to avoid divorce. It was like the percentage of people that end up getting divorced who report that they routinely pray together is apparently in low single digits, according to this report. Mm. I didn't go check the study, take it for what it's worth, but I mean, I buy it. Right.
Sure.
I mean, if you, because to your point, and we were obviously talking about this just yesterday, but it's something I started trying to do frequently, just I think probably in the last year. I'd probably prayed with Ashley, just the two of us, a handful of times before that.
Same.
But I'm trying to do it. I won't claim right now we're getting it done every night, but more nights than not, I think now. And I mean, there's just no doubt that if you're, it takes, the devil tries to talk you out of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line. Like, it feels, you think it's awkward. You don't know what to say. Just
plus
like praying.
There's always tomorrow.
Right. There's that. So, you know, I mean that. The devil tries to talk you out of it because he knows that it will bring you closer to each other under God and to God. So he doesn't want that. But, I mean, I think if you're bold enough in your prayer life to just do that, and it shouldn't take boldness. I mean, like,
I think bold is a good word for that.
I mean,
I actually liked when you said, I mean, because I think part of the underlying theme of this entire show and why we do this is to be bold men.
Yes.
In a time of weak men.
100%. And that's why the word came out. I was just getting at, like, if there's anybody you
really
should be able to.
Really, God's. You're obeying more than being
right.
Bold, I guess. But
I mean, between...
But it
between,
takes a step of boldness to start doing it, to make it a habit.
Right. And all I'm getting at is, like, if there's anybody in the world that you should feel free to pray with and before, it should be your spouse.
Right.
There's lots of other things you do that are just as intimate as that, you know. And that's, again, why I think it feels so awkward and takes so much boldness to do it, is because of how important it is. And so anyway.
See how mature I'm getting? I didn't even issue a joke there.
Good job. It definitely, I mean, if you're taking that step and making a point to do that, you and your wife are going to be more aligned with each other. Again, more aligned under God because of it, because that's where you're praying to. And if that's the case, then the idea of being in a commitment under him is just that much more, like, sealed, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's just that much more rock solidly founded. It's like, how can you sit there and pray with your wife to God and then have, you know, negative thoughts about finding somebody else, right? Like, the two, it would be very hard to be so bold as to pray with her while you're simultaneously thinking about another woman or whatever, right? So everybody do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's relit that fire for me. One that I had always known I should be doing, like
right.
I said, because my parents still do that, but haven't been leading in that capacity. So.
The first time I remember doing it was the day Ashley told me she was pregnant with Riley, our oldest. And I hit my knees and prayed with her, and I was nowhere near spiritually where I am now at that time. That was 15 years ago.
That's right, because that makes sense mathematically, because she recently drove your truck into the house.
Yes, she did, because she's a 15-year-old with a learner's permit. But it's funny, because it was instinctive, right? We were trying, and here we were pregnant, and I just, like, oh, we need to pray. Yeah. And my prayer life was, I wasn't non-existent. I mean, you mentioned yesterday how you've always said little quick prayers, thanks for this cool, beautiful sunrise. I still did that, but it wasn't a discipline. It wasn't something I made sure to do daily by any means, and it wasn't something I would spend 15 minutes doing like I do in the mornings now. But I did that because I just knew, like, this is from God, and we need to pray over it and give thanks and ask for protection and that everything goes well. And I bet I didn't do it again for years, including the birth of three more kids, or the pregnancies of three more kids.
Well, to be honest, the first one's always the most important.
Yeah. It does get...
our younger kids don't listen to the show.
Not that the child is the most important, but the stakes feel absolutely the highest with the first, right?
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
It becomes somewhat routine making babies after the first one.
Well,
for some people, not everybody. Let's make sure to say that, because some people struggle in general and even struggle after one, and so...
Yeah. Well, our devout Catholic president, Joe Biden, ushered in the Trans Day of Visibility for Easter Sunday. I understand that they've historically done this on March 31st. To me, that's no excuse. It is the most pagan thing you could possibly do on the holiest day of the Christian calendar. But you made a good point when we were visiting, though, is that, well, he also announced it on Good Friday.
Right.
Also a pretty freaking important day.
Right.
Why not do it on Wednesday?
I bet most of our listeners saw it over the weekend.
Everyone's been talking
about it. The same
way
we did. And the original meme made it sound... Well, it's funny, because his proclamation, the actual, like, document that was signed that's on the whitehouse.gov website, to me, reading it, and I did only read it once, and I was annoyed the whole time I was reading it. It did make it sound like I'm declaring this day, but the reality is, and thankfully lots of people quickly came to the realization, I guess it's been 15 years now that Transgender Day of Visibility is on March 31st, like you said, and of course Easter moves.
I have a question real quick. Why don't they do that during Pride Month? Why do they now? Why do we have to have it?
Well, they want to fill the calendar with rainbow stuff.
Like, you already have your month.
It's not even rainbow.
Pick a day during your month and do it that day.
How about we just don't do any of it? That'd be my position at this point. But so it had been done, and it also turns out he's done it every year since 2021. So this was the fourth time he's done it. He was the first president to ever acknowledge it. So that should tell you something. So then you could say, well, see, he was just continuing to do something he's already been doing, and it just so happens that this year it happened to be Easter.
Right.
Don't care. Even without the Good Friday part, don't care. You didn't have to acknowledge at this time you were poking people of faith in the eye, and you were poking God in the eye. And God will not be mocked. That's from Scripture. And then it's further worsened by the fact, as you said, that they decided to make the proclamation on Good Friday.
Mm-hmm.
They could have done it on January 1st. Let's remember that March 31st is... It still wouldn't have made it okay. Nothing, no way they could have handled making that proclamation would have satisfied me given this year's calendar. But I do think it was an extra... It was intended by the people who have their hands up Biden's butt.
Yeah.
As a puppet, I mean... The deranged, I mean, dude, we know his administration, his White House, everything is just full of...
It's just DEI all the time. That's all it is.
Dude, but it's specifically LGBTQRS, you know, TUVXYZ, whatever.
Are you surprised that public schools still have Good Friday off? The way that, I mean, just look at the way that, like, what Biden did here, what Joy Reid did mocking Christian faith, calling, this was this last week. Mocking Trump for selling Bibles. Well, I mean, okay, fine. I'm not going to buy a Trump Bible, but if there was a time to sell a Bible, it would probably be, this would be a good time to do it. But then she goes on to say, Jesus, I should have pulled the clip. Jesus of, what did she say? Jesus
of Nazareth.
The Palestinian.
Right.
Of Nazareth.
Right.
And then she went on to say how he was a refugee.
Right.
I mean, the whole thing just was mocking our Lord and Savior, trying to compare it to what's going on in modern day in the Middle East.
She's a terrible person. Horrible. They're all terrible people. They're all anti-Christians.
But meanwhile, their president is over here doing this, and I didn't hear her mention anything about him making a mockery of Good Friday or Easter, for that matter.
I will say the Trump Bible thing... He's just such a consummate huckster, right?
Right. It's par for the course for him.
Yeah, he's selling Bibles for $60 a pop, and they say on there, Make America Pray Again or something like that.
That's
actually
not a bad idea.
And they're being marketed as the only Bible endorsed by Trump.
Right.
Hey, man, there's one side of me that says this is a little bit shameful, and the other side of me says he's selling millions of Bibles. Get after it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing. More Bibles. What else was I going to say about that? Trans stuff.
Well, we'll stick with tranny talk. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers doubled down on protecting his state's high schoolers suffering from gender dysphoria. Take a listen to this clip here.
Veto something, you don't date it, you don't do anything, you just put not approved on the line. And we have now helped our kids, our trans kids. Thanks, everybody.
All the blue-haired, obese women there. Well, they might be women, they might be men, I don't know. But you know how they look, these people, there to support. What that bill was that he just vetoed was a bill that would have prevented biological men from competing in women's high school sports. The irony for me in listening to his comment at the end when he said, and now we have protected our state's trans kids at the cost of what?
Girls.
Every other non-trans kid in your state.
Right. It's unbelievable that... I don't know why I would call it unbelievable, man.
Because it is. It can happen every day. This stuff happens every day.
Right.
And it's still unbelievable because it doesn't make sense. Unbelievable is a fine word to describe it because it is. Every time it happens, I'm like, oh, I still can't believe it. It still makes me angry inside.
The part I was going to specifically point to is how just here in the last few weeks and for over a year now, you've had Congress people in D.C. when there are hearings on this matter standing up and saying, that's not happening. That's not happening. That's not happening. Yet, bills are being vetoed to prevent it. And a dude won the national championship in swimming 2 years ago. So clearly it is happening, and they clearly want it to be happening, and they're clearly driving it forward. I don't know if we've talked about this, but it's amazing to me how this is like hardcore chauvinism, right?
We've talked about it. It's so hardcore. We've talked about Megan Rapinoe. Like,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, we've talked about it. It's anti-feminism.
Absolutely. It's anti-woman. You know, we've spent...
You're not good enough to play in men's sports, women, right? And you're not. Physically, you cannot do it. So we're going to give you your own sports, and you deserve that. Now we're going to take that from you.
Right. We spent 100 years...
Yeah, we've talked about
getting this. Women more rights in this country and providing spaces for them to compete, to flourish, and now they have to give everything, records and gold medals, over to men in the name of, yeah, diversity.
And the voice of reason inclusion. Somehow in the whole thing is Caitlyn Jenner.
Yeah, because we're through the looking glass, bro. All the way.
Who also was put out a tweet about Happy Easter, thanking God for his gift of Jesus Christ, my Savior. I was like, I don't know how you suss that out internally, but okay.
He has to take that stand because he could probably still go out and win the women's Olympic decathlon in the next Olympics.
At the age of like 65. Yeah. Yeah, probably so.
After transitioning.
Who said that? And I don't think you're going to get it right, but it's worth taking a listen to.
It's beyond that, Key. I'm going to tell you. I'm going to just keep it 100 with you. We saw a white girl in Iowa do it to a bunch of black girls.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course.
That made it like, oh, that gained my respect.
I hear you. You're
like,
right.
That's like, oh, she didn't do this to some other little white girls that was over here in Colorado, wherever. She did it to some girls from LSU, you know, who we thought were some dogs.
Defending champs,
and put them on her knee and spanked them.
Spanked them.
Who said that?
I don't know.
So that's Paul Pierce on with Skip Bayless and Keyshawn Johnson. Clearly racist towards white athletes, right?
Yeah, I mean...
he acts like she hasn't played against black girls all year. She plays in the Big Ten.
I mean, do we have to pretend like, by and large, black people are better at basketball?
No, we don't.
Right.
We don't. But just discount the fact that, and I don't even like women's sports. I think Caitlin Clark was hilarious when she said, leading up to March Madness, which I absolutely love. I'm obsessed over this tournament. The men's. I could give a damn about the women's tournament. She said, people are more excited about the women's tournament. I don't know a single person that filled out a women's bracket. Or bet on a woman's game or anything else.
Yeah, yeah. That's not true.
But obviously. Maybe
in Baton Rouge they were because was the where
was
the
it was it, it wasn't racist towards LSU, but why do women want to be called dogs? I didn't understand that part of that. I mean, like, I would never refer to women as a bunch of dogs. Like,
okay, but that's slang, right?
Still,
that's a slang term. In the culture, as they say,
yes.
Just to refer to somebody who's.
I think we could do better, right, and just not do that. I am so glad though that the dogs lost because they didn't come out for the national anthem, so they got what they deserved.
Not only did LSU not come out for the national anthem, but who was it? Iowa.
Iowa
came out and stood and held hands for it.
Right.
Yeah. So.
And our former Baylor coach.
Jeez, dude, what a turn she's taken, huh?
Yeah, her excuse in defending her players was, did you see this? I didn't even know when the national anthem was. Like, it's the first game she's ever coached.
Put your tiger, skin tight tiger leotard thing back on and get back out on the trail, I guess.
She's turned out to be.
Yeah. There's an interesting thing. I haven't looked too closely into it, but apparently the Washington Post is about to release a hit piece on her that her and her whole team are super up in arms about.
No, they released it right before their game, this game.
What was the print? Like, what were they?
It wasn't a hit piece. It was, I actually read it. It was a profile piece. That's all it was. It just, some of it was good, some of it was bad. Like the fact that she doesn't talk to her dad or to her sister, they're estranged.
So you found it balanced in reading it?
Yeah, it was.
And she didn't like having it. She's the queen of college basketball.
I heard the Musers, this old sports talk station in Dallas that you used to listen to, and I still do. And when I'm in the truck, which is not very often during the week, but the morning show there, the Musers, they were talking about exactly that, and that she's just a control freak. And that's what her problem with the piece was, is that she didn't get to have any say in what was in it.
And she probably thinks because she's turned significantly more woke since leaving Baylor to LSU that meant she would just get a glowing, you know, lavishing praise from a woke publication like the Washington Post.
I mean, some of the players did say she made my life a living hell for 4 years. So, I mean, that kind of stuff I'm sure she didn't like. But it wasn't all – I mean, she's won 4 national titles. It wasn't – some of that was doting on her capabilities. Obviously, she's a good coach, but
yeah. Speaking of the Washington Post, I saw an interesting article in it. Have you noticed that
– But can we vow to never talk about women's college basketball again?
I didn't bring it up.
I know.
And I'm not going to, so I can do that.
The point was LSU didn't come out for the national anthem, and they got their asses kicked.
Right.
Good job, Iowa.
Have you seen that Christine Blasey Ford has found her way back into the news lately?
I don't even know who that is.
That's the lady who accused Brett Kavanaugh of having sexually assaulted her when they were 17 years old, 40 years earlier, and had no witnesses. In fact, the people that she claimed were there couldn't remember any of it, and she kind of made an ass of herself trying to take down Kavanaugh. Mm-hmm. And I found out in reading this article that her attorney, there's a video out there of her attorney saying my client is coming forward because she's concerned that Kavanaugh will take down Roe versus Wade.
Huh.
Yeah. So apparently there's been like half a dozen books. It was at least 3 that were cited in the article that have been written since the Kavanaugh drama, you know, all but one of which have basically eviscerated all of it and, you know, done the actual research that the journalist should have done at the time to prove how full of crap she was. But I guess she's been on The View. She's got a book out now, and it's selling millions
of
copies.
Of course she has.
Well, Blasey Ford, yeah. Blasey Ford has a book out. She went on The View.
That's what I'm saying. Of course she has.
Tongue-bathed her for the whole thing. But the point is, this Washington Post article, it was an opinion piece. I mean, it was like, this is a scandal. This woman is a crook. She was citing to all the books that took this thing down and saying, you know, what an atrocity it was that the entire machine got behind this nonsense. I thought it was interesting. It was very, very slanted against Blasey Ford in favor of Kavanaugh and everybody else who was affected by it. Because there was a dude that was named, and I don't remember his name, but almost had it. Judge. His last name is Judge, interestingly. He was supposedly there, and he wouldn't come forward to speak about it because he instantly started getting – he has now written his own book just here recently as well, and is now going out years later to speak about what happened to him. And he's basically saying, I was getting pressured and threatened by the Democratic Party and the entire machine to shut my mouth, and they ruined my life. And they basically accused me of being an accomplice to a sexual assault. If she had claimed that he stood over her laughing and like cheering Kavanaugh on while he was supposedly doing this thing.
Because I keep seeing this happen. And I'll give you an example. This guy, Trevor Bauer, won a Cy Young in Major League Baseball. Some whack job lady accused him of sexual assault. It took like 2 years to the court process. Well, his team, coming off of a Cy Young winning season.
Right, cut him.
Released him. And he pitched in Japan last year. He's come back. He's tried to get tryouts with him. Nobody will hire the guy. It comes out that she completely fabricated the story, ruined his life. Yeah.
He was able to produce in discovery all sorts of texts between her and a friend of hers plotting to take him for all he was worth.
Hundreds of millions of dollars she cost him.
Yeah.
Put a stain on his reputation forever. And she's not in jail. There's no repercussions. This needs to be revisited and amended, and these people need to be held accountable when they basically it's a money grab every time, right?
Yeah. Well,
or if it's politics, they're trying to ruin someone's career.
Right.
But and she could care less about ruining his career. She just wanted money. She wanted to be paid off.
Yeah, she was making it explicitly clear. Like the moment she met him, she's texting a friend saying, I met this baseball player that's worth millions of dollars. I'm about to get paid. Mm. And that back and forth was like, take him for all he's worth. You know, it was gross, man.
Yeah. No. You saw that Kathy Hochul got kicked out of Officer, let me say his name because they won't, Officer Diller.
Yeah.
She got New kicked York out police of his officer. Wake. Like, she just showed up like she was going to be welcomed in when she's the one that continues to release these violent criminals back onto the streets in New York. And have you seen this new contagion in New York City where people just punch women in the face?
Yeah, I mean, that one's bad. So is throwing people in front of subway trains on purpose. That's happening all the time.
This one guy that I just saw this week hit this woman in the these are just women just walking down the street and just getting punched in the face. Sucker punch. One girl had to have her jaw wired shut. But the last one I saw, the dude had 7 assault convictions previously. Why is he on the street?
7. Because that's what they do. That's what the...
Well, that's why she wasn't welcome at this guy's wake, because right. A repeat offender killed Officer Diller in a routine traffic stop. Just shot him dead.
Yep.
Trump
Meanwhile,
was there, though.
Trump was there, yeah. And he was allowed to stay the whole time while Obama and Bill Clinton were taking part in a Biden fundraiser where, like, Lizzo played, and they raised, like, $27 million because Biden's in such a bad way, they have to bring out all the living, you know, upright former Democratic presidents to try to blow some life into his failing campaign. Although the polling is getting closer, quote unquote.
Yeah, I've been seeing
nonsense.
That. Yeah. So this one has to be kind of a short episode, right?
Yep.
So you had a revelation at church on Easter.
I did. We may have to table that one. I don't know if I can squeeze it into 7 minutes. I had a couple of other quickies.
All right, we'll do that. We'll talk about that one next episode.
I did have a revelation, and it's very relevant right now. I will tee it up. I have said a couple times that abortion is literally all they have. The Democrats, I mean. It's all they have, right, is this new evil.
Sacred.
Right, there's this... There is. I'm not joking or exaggerating when I say that there are, you know, true forces of evil, you know, satanic, demonic forces behind the abortion movement. It went from, quote, safe, legal, and rare back in the 90s to we should be able to kill it and pull it apart when it's the day that it's coming out of the womb. Planned Parenthood is... I mean, I don't even know that they try to deny these videos where they talk about ripping a third trimester pregnancy limb from limb and selling its parts for, you know, medical experiments. There's a business now in New Mexico that's funded by the Satanic Temple that calls itself Samuel Alito Jr.'s mom's satanic abortion facility or something like that. Mm. And they're actually making the argument that sacrificing these babies, it's a religious practice, right? And they're actually doing it on purpose to try to get it covered as a religious right. To your point a minute ago, I stumbled on a Planned Parenthood page where some lady, the headline is, and you can Google this right now, abortion is sacred. Mm-hmm. And she makes an argument from a Native American perspective that abortion is a sacred right. So anyway, my revelation was about that, but it's timely too, because like I said, they can't talk about the economy. They can't talk about immigration. They can't talk about the never ending wars. They want to continue to fight.
No, they can't talk about, that's not true. At that fundraiser for Biden, I heard a clip from Obama claiming that black unemployment was the lowest that it's ever been in this country.
They can try to talk about it, but nobody's buying it.
That the economy's booming.
Right. But the right to destroy babies.
Has anyone gone to the grocery store in the last week? Have you seen the price of everything?
So, like you said, I do have to jump. But right before we jumped on, I saw that Mitch McConnell has announced he plans to stay in his current term, which doesn't end until 2026. So we got two more years of computer glitch McConnell freezing up. So, you know, between him and Joe and Nancy and Fetterman, the country's being run by a bunch of
the four, Fetterman seems like the most sane right now.
Yeah, totally.
Like,
yeah,
he struck out real bad when he was running. But he's like giving up his sweatshirts a little bit and like starting to make sense cognitively, like carrying on conversations, completing sentences. It's amazing.
Yeah, I actually saw
a miracle.
I saw a hilarious Babylon Bee article that said Democrats are pushing for a nationwide recall of John Fetterman because they don't like what he has to say now.
Right.
And the last one was another new piece of news that was coming for a few weeks. But remember when Oregon decided to decriminalize all drugs a few years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And then it didn't really go very well. They ended up with like the first to second highest rates of overdoses, something called drug abuse syndrome or something like that. Gross cities like Portland fell even further into, you know, gross, you know, just destruction. Well, the governor of Oregon just today
going into the fire.
That's right. The governor of Oregon just today decided to try to put the fire out to keep the crab from burning itself up by signing into law a bill recriminalizing drug possession, although it includes a bunch of stuff about the, you know, courts and the police should opt for, they should put together, instead of sending them to jail, but they have that option, like rehab programs, right? Assistance programs to get people back on their feet. But yeah, who could have saw that coming, man? Who could have saw that coming?
Right.
Hmm.
Yeah. Turns out open air drug scenes are not a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Facilitated by the government.
Right.
All right. Chisholm's got to run. That is going to do it for episode 169 of Justified Pursuit, live from Turkey Camp. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Y'all pray Cable doesn't strike out. Although by the time you hear this,
break down. Go ahead, give it to me. Break down, honey, take me through.